As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Your alternative talk radio contact, the planet, KGRARadio.com.
Infinite complacence. People went to and fro of the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Yeah, Doug, in case no one has heard, you know, your first episode with me, like I said, was Into the Fray 35. How did you get into Bigfoot? Why are you interested in this?
Well, I had always been interested in Bigfoot. And when I started working for the Guernsey County Library in Cambridge, Ohio, back in the early 90s, I discovered very quickly that we had Bigfoot books on the shelf. And so I read everything that we had, and after I finished that, I was told by one of the other clerks there that I could do an interlibrary loan with other libraries and order in what they had on their shelves. So I did that and read out, you know, everything I could get my hands on that way. Then I started sending faxes to the state library with titles and authors, and I had stuff coming in from out west, you know, Oregon and California, and, you know, stuff that I couldn't access over in the east because I'm in Ohio. Then there was a couple that lived in the town where I was working in Cambridge that had a sighting at Salt Fork State Park, which is just 6 or 7 miles north of Cambridge. And I knew them, and so a co-worker and I, who was also interested in Bigfoot, we got a hold of the couple, and we met with them out at the park, and they took us to the spot where the sighting took place and told us about it and showed us some more places in the park where footprints had been found and things like that. And, you know, it just blossomed after that. We started researching. About every weekend, we'd go to Salt Fork, and then the next weekend, we'd go up to Coshocton County, because there was a lot of history in that county as well. Within, that was 2006, I believe, when we started that. By 2008, we had a handful of other people that were interested in it, and so we started our Southeastern Ohio Society for Bigfoot Investigations group, started having meetings every other month there at the library. That's taken off now to where we have camp out. We don't meet at the library anymore. We had been meeting out at Salt Fork at the group camping area, but they never opened it this year. So we found a spot up in Coshocton County up by Wills Creek Reservoir. And we had about five or six campouts up there this year and had some activity. So we're just kind of wrapping things up. I think we'll have one more campout this year, and then we'll stop those for, you know, for the rest of the year. And hopefully by next year, this COVID thing will be out of the way and we can get back to having our meetings inside and meet at the Salt Fork campground.
Yeah, because that's where you guys really like to have the group campouts and the outdoor meetings, right, is at Salt Fork State Park?
Yeah, and the regular campground, as well as their primitive campground, opened up, but the place they call the group camping area, which is what we used in the church groups and the Boy Scouts and so on, that area never did open. They told us that they're not going to open it at all this year, so we had to try to find another place. So we ended up finding a place up there in Coshocton County. But this COVID has really affected us, because we had we did one library talk in February before it started. And then we did the Ohio Bigfoot Conference at Salt Fork, and we did a train ride in Perry County on a Saturday and a Sunday. Everything else we had scheduled was canceled, and that includes conferences and library talks. We had about 20-some library talks in Ohio, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, and they all got canceled. And that's really affected me, because, well, I'm not selling, you know, hardly any books. Plus, I'm not getting stories from people if I want to do another book, because that's where most of them come from, is, you know, from the audience when they go to the library or conference to listen to you speak. A lot of times they'll come up afterwards and they'll say, you know, I saw one of those things, but I was always afraid to talk about it. But, you know, if you listen to me, I'd like to tell you what happened. And then I get the contact information, and I'm hardly getting anything this year because of that.
Yeah, I know that when people actually see other people there for Bigfoot and nobody's laughing about it, it really makes them open up, right? It makes a huge difference to them. They decide to finally talk to somebody about it.
Right. You know, I don't have to use people's names. I just want to get the stories, get them written down on paper, you know, and published in a book so they're preserved. Because if that story doesn't get written down and the witness dies, they take that story to the grave with them.
Right.
And I'm afraid we've lost a lot of them already. So I'm just trying to find the ones that are still out there.
And, I didn't mention this in the onset, I apologize, but of course the book is Silent Forest, More Bigfoot Mysteries. And this one is not just settled in Ohio, everybody. This one, he's got plenty of other locations in here. And Doug, your books, I have always loved them, because they're right to the point. They get, you know, right to the meat and potatoes of the story. And there's not a whole lot of, I guess, what some might call fluff. Like, you're not putting a bunch of your opinions in there, or, you know, extra stuff about, you know how some of the books get. But I've always liked that about yours, and that's a nice way to read, especially a Bigfoot story. You just kind of leave it up to the reader to see what they think about, you know, what it was and what it was doing there.
And not all the stories are terrifying. You know, some people have felt exhilarated, you know, when they saw the creature or heard the creature, and, you know, they want to see it again or they want to hear it again. Other people are scared to death, you know, don't ever want to set foot in the woods again, but that's not always the case.
Yeah, it definitely runs the gamut, doesn't it? Some people, they get the fire lit and then they're obsessed with it, and others are like, I'm never going in the woods again. So yeah, it definitely goes either way, or maybe kind of in the middle, and people are a little bit more impartial about it. But Doug, have you had any, we haven't talked in a long time, have you had any possible Bigfoot sighting, or, you know, any interesting activity that you wanted to talk about?
Well, the area in Coshocton County where we've been having our campouts this year is very promising. They're getting a lot of vocalizations, and they're getting stuff, you know, with the FLIR units and the night vision. As far as you know, naked eye sighting of something up, you know, close where there's absolutely no doubt what they're looking at, I'm not aware of anybody having one of those yet, but you know, that could change. It's we're soon going to be in mid-October, and the leaves are coming down, and you can see down in the woods more and more each day. So hopefully you know, plus we've got bow season in now, and there's a lot of deer hunters out in the woods, so hopefully we'll start getting some more reports here real soon.
Yeah, we like when the hunters get out in the woods, because it means that usually those are the guys that go out a lot of times by themselves, and they see something, like we said, either interesting or terrifying. So hunters see these things quite a bit.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of my reports have been from hunters.
Really quick, how many of those people, if you just take the group hunters, how many of those guys were in the category of, I'm never going in the woods again? Or are most of them pretty, oh, well, I know it's out there now, but I'm still okay with going out to hunt?
Well, several of them have told me that they don't feel comfortable now. You know, I kind of felt the same way when I used to deer hunt a lot, and, you know, rabbit hunt and squirrel and this and that. And I always felt very at ease and peaceful in the woods. And when I started taking reports and, you know, reading other stories, you know, other books and stuff about Bigfoot and Dog Man and things like that, I remember the last year or two when I did go out, I looked behind me as much as I did out in front of me, because I didn't want something sneaking up, you know, from behind or anything like that. But I've had people, I had one guy on the phone, he cried on the phone when he told what happened to him, and he didn't even see one. He just heard it scream. And I had another guy. I've had two people that I've talked to over the phone that told me they moved because of their encounter. They moved away from where they'd lived for years and years and moved to the city because they couldn't stand thinking about running into something like that again on the old homestead. And then, like I said, there's other people that take the other fork in the road, and they actively go out and look for these things, and they want to see another one. You know, they just can't believe that it's out there, and they want to know everything they can find out and see it again and develop a relationship with them. So, you know, most people kind of fall somewhere in between those two extremes, but, you know, it affects people differently.
After taking this many reports and now writing these books, and like you said, having actually people get emotional with you while they're retelling their story, does it make you hesitant as far as, well, I want to see one, but not so close, or maybe you'd want to have a road sighting? Like, you know, how close would you want to see one?
Oh, I've got no problem with having a road sighting, or I can't get around like I used to because of my knee surgery. But if I had my choice to see one, I'd be more than satisfied to be in the vehicle driving down the road and see one, mm-hmm. Cross the road in front of me or out in the field. I don't think I would want to be 2 miles back in the woods and run into something. And hopefully it's a very mild mannered one with, that hasn't just gotten in a fight with an alpha male and got run off or something like that, or a female with young or something. And if I never see one, that's okay too. I've certainly enjoyed talking to the witnesses that have seen them. I can take it or leave it. It's not something that's on my bucket list. If it happens, it happens. But if it doesn't, I can accept that.
That's a good way to look at it. Instead of driving yourself crazy, right? Like, well, I'm in Ohio and I write books about Bigfoot, so I have to see Bigfoot.
And, I've been out to Salt Fork hundreds of times because it's not very far from where I live. I can be out there within 20 minutes or so from the house. And, you would think the odds are going to catch up one of these days in one of my trips out there. I'm going to see something, but hasn't happened yet. I have found tracks and I've heard some howls and I heard a scream one time, and we found hair on a fence and out in the country on a farm that had Bigfoot activity. We found broken, twisted trees, but just haven't seen the thing yet.
Not yet. That's the key. That's the key phrase, Doug. No, I know that everyone will go, why didn't you ask this? The hair, and it's very expensive to send hair in to get DNA samples, but what happened with the hair?
Well, the property that the hair came from was written about in my first book, Standing in the Shadows. And this couple owned this property and they moved to Columbus, and then they came back and ended up on the same property where the lady had grown up. And the man started keeping a diary of everything that happened. They would hear screams down in the woods, and tracks would appear in the snow in the yard. They had cattle on the property, and there were times where the cows wouldn't go in the barn in the wintertime to be fed. And it was because they found where a Bigfoot had gone into the barn at night to get in out of the freezing rain or cold temperatures or whatever, and then left in the morning, and they saw the big tracks, but the cows were afraid to go in the barn. So I met these people, and the gentleman finally died. I think it was 2006 or 8 or something like that. And his wife continued to live out there by herself for another 6 or 8 years. And she was very concerned that the thing would, come up and kick the door in and come in the house and kill her and, all sorts of things like that. And I used to talk to her on the phone all the time. And I said, now, Mary Lou, they've been coming around your property for 25 years and they've never harmed you. They'll slap on the house and scream and things like that. But if they had wanted to do something like that, I think they would have done it by now, and they haven't done it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, we got some hair on one of the fences, and I gave some of it to a friend of mine from Pennsylvania, and he called me up, and he had been reading about Melba Ketchum doing her study, and he said, would you mind if I sent some of that hair to Melba? And I says, no, go ahead. Well, long story short, he sent some, and as it turned out, there was no root on the hair, so they couldn't get any DNA from it.
Right. Well, still worth a try. Still a cool find, right? I mean, was it really long and coarse and thick?
Oh, yeah. It's. I've got an individual strand scotch taped to a white sheet of paper, and I think it measured 14 inches long.
Oh, wow.
And it was on the top strand of a barbed wire fence, and it was on the interior fence of this piece of property on the Ringer farm. And when I questioned Mrs. Ringer about what that could have come from, she says, well, had it been on the outside fence, the one next to the road, there may be a chance somebody was coming along and riding a horse and got close to it and snagged it. But since it was on the interior fence line, she said there's nothing inside that enclosure that would have had hair that looked like that other than the Black Angus cattle. And this looks nothing like, you know, anything that came from the Black Angus cow. The top strand of wire was kind of sagging a little bit where something had pushed down as it stepped over it.
Oh.
And so that's what we're, you know, we can't prove that's what it's from, but that's what we think it's from, just from all the history on that property.
Well, that's very cool. Man, they'd come up and slap the house and stuff, huh? They'd come that close?
Yeah, and see, she would throw garbage out over the fence.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that a lot. People, you know, people live in the country. I suppose some of them in the city might do it too. But in the country, you know, a lot of people still have a burn barrel, and they'll take stuff out to the fence for the possums and coons or dogs or whatever. And you do attract all sorts of animals, but Bigfoot is very opportunistic. And if, you know, he smells pork chop bones or watermelon or something that you've pitched over the fence, he'll get into that too. And once you condition them to coming around and getting that hand out, and then if you stop doing it, I think that's possibly where you get the banging on the house. She even had handfuls of gravel pitched up on the roof under her bedroom window.
Oh my gosh.
As she was, yeah, she would hear them stomping around in the yard. And, you know, she'd hear sometimes she'd hear a scream way off and then one close. And she actually one time heard the chattering, you know, like the talking. And she said it sounded like somebody out there speaking Chinese, you know, and it was like midnight and it woke me up. And there was like a couple of them mumbling around like in Chinese. Her bedroom was up on the second floor, and she'd sometimes go to bed and read and have the light on. And, you know, these things aren't dumb. They're very intelligent. I think they knew she's the lady that throws the scraps over the fence. And, you know, they come back around and they see that light on up there, and they go down to the fence and there's nothing there. So they bang on the house, or they throw a handful of gravel up toward the window where that light's on, just to get her attention. You know, and it scared the snot out of her, because by this time she's out there living by herself because her husband's dead. And, you know, what's she going to do? Call the sheriff and say, I got Bigfoot in my yard. And then, yeah. So she used to call me, and she'd call some of the other Bigfooters. And I used to run out there, and I'd stayed all night on her couch one time. And then there was times we just cruised around in the vehicles. But we never saw anything when we went out. But, you know, I found tracks. I've got pictures of the tracks in the first book. They were like 19 inches long and 62 inches between one step and the next, right in a straight line, going right through the yard.
And that poor woman, you know, it's not enough with the slapping and the rock, the pebbles being thrown, but to hear the samurai chatter in the middle of the night would creep anybody out. And she's out there by herself.
Oh, yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah, and they stripped her apple tree overnight one time.
Really? I wonder how high the highest one was, and it was still gone, huh?
Yeah, she said she parked the car in the garage and was walking to the house and looked over at the apple tree, and she said, boy, that thing's just loaded. I'm going to have to get one of the neighbor boys to come over and get up there and pick those apples for me. Well, she didn't act quick enough, because within a day or two, something had come in at night and everything was gone, clear up the top of the tree.
Wow. Does she still live out there?
Oh, yeah. Well, unfortunately, no. She developed Alzheimer's or dementia anyway, and her daughters, one lived in Cleveland and I think one down Cincinnati, they took her out of the home and she went to a nursing home and she just recently died.
Oh, and I'm sorry to hear that.
Someone else bought the property, and I understand there is a woman living out there, and I have no idea whether they still come around, but, you know, I just haven't, you know, I don't know how to, you know, I can't just go out there and knock on the door and introduce myself. Hey, you seen any Bigfoot, you know? So hopefully if they are out there, they're behaving themselves and they haven't scared her witless, or maybe she'll read something.
Yeah, I was just going to say, maybe you could just draw, because I have one of your business cards. Maybe you just plop your business card, you know, one of your books in the mailbox one day, you know, something.
Well, I've got some cousins that live out in that area, and they know about what I'm into and my books and stuff. So maybe one of them will run into this woman sometime and say something to her.
Yeah, I guarantee she's like, what did I buy? Like, what is going on around here, right? I highly doubt they probably didn't leave. I mean, they're probably going, where's the nice lady that used to feed us?
Yeah, they were never harassed or shot at or anything like that all the the 30 years or whatever that the Ringers lived out there and the things were there. Mm. So,
thanks for sharing that, Doug.
I don't know. And this isn't very far from Salt Fork. You know, by the way the crow flies, it's not that many miles from Salt Fork.
All right, Doug, well, what do you think? Should we tackle a few of these encounter stories here?
We can do that.
You want to start with the just passing through in Jackson County, Ohio?
Just passing through. Now, if I recall, this lady, we had spoken at the library down in Jackson. I think we've been down there 3 or 4 times anyway. And she gave me her name and phone number and said that she had a story, but I was not to use her name because of her. I can't recall now whether she was a nurse or a teacher or what. So this isn't a real name, but she's a real person. She was vacuuming one day on a Saturday afternoon in her Jackson County home. And she shut the machine off because her dog outside kept barking and barking and barking, and it wouldn't stop. And she could hear it even, you know, over top of the noise that the vacuum was making. So she went to the sliding glass door and looked out and saw her large male dog running from side to side on the wooden deck. The hair on his back was sticking straight up like a punk rocker. She turned her head to see, you know, what he was looking at out in the yard, and saw this creature, this 7 foot tall, dark, upright walking creature walking through the yard, swinging its arms. She said she couldn't believe her eyes. She thought maybe she was hallucinating. She watched it for about 15 seconds until it crossed the yard and disappeared into the woods north of the house. She opened the door and got her dog in and then shut the door and locked it and locked all the other doors in the house. When her husband came home, she told him about it, and she was upset with him because he didn't seem to believe her. He kind of blew it off and he wouldn't even go out and look around for tracks or anything. Well, nothing more was said of the incident until one day in 2013, when she returned home and her husband had been there alone, just he and the dog. And he says, remember that time you said you saw Bigfoot? And she said, yeah, why? He said that he had been outside in the yard and heard a loud crash from down in the woods behind the house. And their dog, which wasn't the same one that was barking the day that she was running the vacuum, it was a different dog. But the dog ran down into the forest where the noise came from and was barking at something. Next, the man heard a yelp as if the dog had gotten hurt. He started to go down into the woods to find out what happened when he was met by his dog coming back up into the yard. The animal was staggering like it had been injured and seemed to be very disoriented. It also smelled awful from something with which it had come into contact. Kathy told me that when she came home, the dog was still very stinky and she had to give it a bath. And the odor was very strong like a skunk's, but it smelled more like rotten meat. The dog fully recovered from the incident. They hear screams and howls from the woods on occasion, and her husband isn't so sure that Bigfoot doesn't exist after all. These encounters took place near the Finley Chapel Road area outside of Wellston, Ohio. And I looked on my map, and I have all kinds of reports from that area. That's in Jackson County. And if you ever get a chance to look at a map of Jackson County, you'll see where Jackson and Wellston are on the map. And I must have 10 or 12 stickers in that area, you know, from sightings. So it's a very hot area. This would have been, Wellston. Actually, it would be just west of Wellston between the little town called Colton. Colton and Wellston is where that took place. But I get a lot of reports from down there, and we usually speak at the library in both of those places. Just, they have us down just about every year. That was the one that we got to do this year before the COVID shut us down. We were in Jackson in February.
It does seem like in this case, because sometimes the dogs don't really get out so lucky, but in this case, the dog seemed to get out mostly unscathed.
Yeah, it did, but a lot of them don't, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, this next one, I know that it's kind of a longer one, and it may actually take up most of the rest of our time, but I found so many interesting aspects to this one. And it even has pictures of tracks, and the chapter even opens up with, and you have color photos in your books too, which is nice. But the fact that this lady actually got a picture of something in the woods, it is hard to tell, but considering all the rest of the chapter and the activity, you know, it makes you think it really could have been something that she got in that photo. So this is from Erie County, New York.
Yeah, and I met her. Her name is Garnet Stevenson, and she lives on Four Rod Road, and she was not at all reluctant to give me her name and tell me where she lived, and she still has stuff going on. I'm Facebook friends with her, and I still hear from her, and she sends me messages quite a bit, tells me whenever something else happens or if she's heard anything from anybody else. And she's got a gentleman that lives, I believe, over around Erie, Pennsylvania. I'm not sure if that's where he lives, but he checks in on, you know, at her property from time to time, you know, to see if anything's going on.
Right.
So but I had met her up at Chautauqua, New York, at Peter Weimer's conference a couple years ago, and that's when she gave me this story. She actually had a sighting. One day she was driving down this four-rod road toward her home. It was about 2:30 in the afternoon on February 23rd of 2018. As she neared the residence, she glanced out the right side of her truck window toward her neighbor's property. She saw what she at first thought was a man walking across the pasture bottomland in the direction of Buffalo Creek. She slowed her truck to a near halt and wondered out loud who would be out in this weather on a cold, rainy day on her just recently deceased neighbor's property. Now, this was the same property where she had a sighting herself, but this thing she saw walking across property, she first thought it was possibly somebody in a ghillie suit, but she said he didn't have on a coat or hat, carried nothing in his hands, and appeared to be very dark in color. That's why she was thinking, you know, possibly it was a ghillie suit. By now, she had completely stopped the truck and rolled the window down. and watched what appeared to be a very large individual walking through the same pasture field that she had ridden across on her horse many times before. The legs looked completely different from a person's legs. They were bent at the knees as it walked, and the speed with which it covered the distance across the pasture was unreal, too. It didn't run, but it walked very fast. It had to have been 7 to 8 feet tall and all black. The arms swung as it walked, and within a minute or so, it was several hundred yards away and vanishing into the woods on that side of the field. And then there's a picture in here that she sent me of a track that she made a cast with, and she made it with that foam stuff that you buy at the hardware store.
Okay, I was wondering why it looked like that. I gotcha. Well, that was smart.
Yeah, I've used that stuff. I haven't tried making a cast, but I know guys that do, just because it's so convenient. And it's not the finished product doesn't come out looking as good as plaster or HydroCal or anything,
mm-hmm.
but it's very convenient because all you have to do is carry that can around. But that's what that is. On page 23 is that spray foam, but it's black or dark. I hadn't seen the dark color of it. Some other things having to do with this property that we think is Bigfoot related. She said the neighbor that had just recently passed away not too long before this, his daughter lives there now. And she said she drove over to the house recently and saw that the man had put up motion detector lights outside of all sides of the home. She said that the fellow had an odd habit of shooting guns at night. She would quite often hear gunfire late coming from across the road from her house, sometimes at 10, 11, even 12 o'clock at night, he'd be shooting. Many times she'd heard wood knocks from the area around her home, and she claims to have on occasion seen trees that were broken off very high up over her head as she rode her horse out into the woods. Now, this lady has horses on her property, and sometimes they exhibit odd behavior. There's a section of their pasture in which they refuse to go. Strange noises can be heard coming from a ravine down the hill from the fence line of the corral. A very strange thing happened to this fence, too, not just once, but several times earlier. Garnet had nailed an upper rail to the corral fence behind the barn. The boards were 12 foot long 2x6s, and they were each secured to the 4x4 treated posts with 3.5-inch spiral nails. Shortly after this top rail was nailed into place, now she had, the fence had been up, but it only had two boards on it. And she decided she needed to make it higher, so she bought 12-foot 2x6s to make a top rail that put the total height up around 5 feet. But, the fence had been there all this time with just two boards on it. Now it's got three boards. Okay, shortly after this top rail was nailed into place, Garnet discovered that one section had been taken down by something and was lying halfway on the ground. Thinking that perhaps the horses had kicked it down, she again nailed it up to a height of about 5 feet. The weather had gotten colder and the horses were locked inside the barn now, and still, when Garnet went behind the barn and checked the fence, the top board was laying partway on the ground again. Three of the six spiral nails were pulled from the 4x4s. Up and down the rail went 5 or 6 times until Garnet finally said, "Forget it," and just left the thing down. She told me one time it was warm out and she had her bedroom windows open. She could hear the spiral nails being pulled from the 4x4s by something out in the darkness, something a lot stronger than you and me.
Mm.
She says it wasn't pounded or kicked or beat on with anything. Something just grabbed the boards and pulled, and she could hear, those spiral nails coming out.
Unreal. When I read that part, I starred that part and underlined it. I'm like, holy cow.
Yeah, it was as if this particular Bigfoot was in the habit of coming up out of the ravine at night and heading up to her horse barn to peek in the windows at the horses. Now, yes, she does have windows that face out from the back of each stall. Anyway, it must have gotten upset when this top 2x6 was added to the fence, increasing the height to around 5 feet. Now it was unable to simply step over it. So instead of going around or climbing or vaulting over it, it thought, oh, no, you don't, lady. And it tore part of it down so it could still step over it like it had been doing for who knows how long. And then the most chilling incident took place early one morning, February of 2014. Garnet was awakened by a phone call from her mother at 2:30 a.m. The older woman claimed that there was a man trying to break into her house through the back sliding glass door. Garnet and her husband sprang into action and rushed over to her mother's place, which is just behind their own residence a short distance away. They pulled into the driveway. They drove to the back and aimed the headlights in the direction of the wooded area and ravine. Now, this is that same ravine where the horses are afraid to go down in, where they hear the noises. They didn't see anything. Well, they entered the house and found Garnet's mother sitting at the table. Her skin was a frightening shade of gray, and she was very visibly shaken by the ordeal. She told them she had awakened and to use the bathroom. When she stepped from the bedroom into the hallway, she turned her head slightly and looked down the hall towards the door. There on the other side of the glass was what she described as a very big black man, hunched over and running his hands along the glass in an apparent attempt at opening the door. The door was, however, locked, and he wasn't successful in getting inside. The porch outside the sliding door overlooks the same spooky ravine that was previously mentioned. Although Garnet's mother continued to insist that it was a big black African-American man, Garnet thinks otherwise due to all the other evidence found on the property. In addition, she said there aren't any African-Americans living in the area. Another piece of evidence was uncovered when I questioned Garnet some more about the spooky area. She told me that she and a girlfriend were swimming in the creek down in the ravine a while back, and they got an overpowering feeling of being watched, so they left. On another occasion, Garnet asked her daughter to walk down into the ravine and see if she could find any reason why the horses would no longer go into that area. The woman and her husband did just that and returned a while later with the head of a 12-point buck that was found dead down there. They couldn't find out what had killed the deer, but since they were able to remove the head from the body with ease, it's possible that something had killed it by twisting its head and breaking its neck. And then there was this. Garnet recently ran into an acquaintance at the market. This was a neighbor that I don't know how far away she lives, but not real far. She was asking her about her property and if any deer hunters had been successful. The woman told Garnet that she had stopped all hunting on her property because she was finding deer and turkeys dead and hanging high in the trees on her land. She couldn't figure out why hunters would do that. She didn't like that, so she gave no more permission for anyone to hunt. Well, hunters wouldn't do that, but I know something that will. This took place not far from Garnet's residence, east on Route 20A towards Varysburg near a golf course. And according to Garnet, there is still things happening up there.
Does she still find deer and turkeys hanging from trees? Have you heard of that lately?
Well, she apparently hasn't run into that neighbor anymore. But she can't blame it on the hunters if she finds anything else because she hasn't given them permission.
Right.
But But I do still hear from her. You know, she sends me messages. It's like the pictures in the book where it shows something standing up in the corner, you know, like in the trees watching. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's still stuff going on up there.
Mm. There were so many interesting aspects to that. Like, I wonder what the strange noises were, you know, what they sounded like, what that was. Maybe it was more chatter or something like that, or some kind of a mimic, because sometimes they're known to mimic people or dogs or whatever. So I just wonder what strange noises were.
And you know, when the story involves animals, you know, people can sometimes jump to conclusions and pull the wool over your eyes on things. But if a horse is afraid to go down in an area where it's been going into, you know, all its life, or a dog acts like a dog knows something's out there, you know, it's nighttime, the dog needs to be put out to pee before it comes in for bed, and it's afraid to go out because something's out there. You know, that makes you wonder what, you know, just what the hell's going on, what's out there.
Did she ever end up having to actually maybe, you know, put something over the windows in the barn so that the horses would calm down a little bit, or?
Well, I asked her about those windows, and she said they were up real high because on the outside, if you were to walk up to this barn, you had to walk uphill. And she said it would have probably been like 8 feet high on the outside to look in. And I said, well, have you ever seen any handprints or smudge marks or anything like that? And she said, well, the horses put their muzzle up against the glass. I said, no, on the outside, did you ever go out and look on the out, you know, get a ladder and climb up there and see if you see handprints or a nose print on the outside of the glass? And I don't think she had done it. And she's not told me if she's done it since.
8 feet up there. But, oh, my goodness.
Well, I asked her if they, you know, I said, well, have they ever tried to get in that barn? She said, well, no, I shut the doors and lock them at night, and they've never tried to break in. But there are days when the horses don't want to come out of there, like they're real spooked. And then when they go out into that corral, there's one section that's close to that spooky ravine. She said they won't even go over in that section.
Even if she's I wonder if she was on the horse, if it would go over there, if it would still be like, no, lady, I'm not going near that ravine.
Nah, they don't like whatever's down in that ravine. Yeah. They don't like to go over there.
Smart animals.
You know, I don't know if the things are down there most of the time or just some of the time or at different times of the year. The animals seem to know, you know, when something's out there. That's a good barometer you can use.
Well, like you said, people can fake things, but animals, they don't. Well, Doug, thank you so much for coming back on. Now, can you let everybody know, you know, where to find you, give out your email address, and, of course, how to get your books?
Yeah, my email is lowercase dwaller465@gmail.com. You can contact me that way, or you can go on Facebook. I have a Facebook page, and our group, our SOSBI group, it's Southeastern Ohio Society for Bigfoot Investigation. We have a Facebook group. You can contact me any of those ways if you'd like to get a book. They're $18, and the postage is $4. And you can send a check, or you can buy it through PayPal. I do, as I was saying earlier, I was selling books anytime that I would speak or, you know, go to a conference or something, but there haven't been that many of them, you know, come to be this year, but hopefully next year we'll get back to things. I don't know how long it'll be before I get enough stories for another book. Probably going to take a little bit longer than usual.
Do you accept email submissions for that kind of thing, or would you rather when you meet people in person at your talks?
Yeah, they can do that. I've had people sit down with me in person, and I've had people send me emails. I've had, you know, people write letters and send them, and emails, text messages, all sorts of ways. Usually, if I don't meet with them in person, I sat down on the phone and put the recorder down, put the phone on speaker, and ask questions and just tell them to start at the beginning, and I'll stop, interrupt them, and ask them a question and write stuff down. And then a lot of times it takes a second or even third call, you know, to get more details. What I really like to do is when I get a story is look and see if I've got anything else from that same area, or go on the BFRO website and see if they've got anything, or any of the other groups, you know, that have databases with reports, because I think that adds some credence to the story when you can find out that they've, you know, they've been spotted in that area before. And they don't have to be recent stories. You know, I actually get a kick out of the older stories more so than some of the new ones, you know, because, you know, I may have said this before, you know, an 80-year-old farmer has nothing to gain to come out and tell me that they saw one of those things when they were 10 years old, you know, back in the day and out in the hayfield.
Well, it's cool when they finally decide, okay, I'm going to choose you to tell my story. That's a really good feeling, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's what we get when we have these talks at libraries. Oftentimes, there'll be the old boy in the bib overalls sitting in the back of the room with his arms crossed, and he never says a word or anything. And then after the talk's over and we're tearing everything down and getting ready to leave, and then he comes up and says, I saw one of them things 50 years ago, but I never knew what it was and didn't know how to tell anybody. And I think I'd like to tell somebody now. You know, they want to get it off their chest.
Yeah. Yeah. I bet you have at least one of those at every talk, right? Like you said, they almost have this look on their face, like a near scowl, like, uh-oh, I'm not sure what to make of this guy, but then he's the one with the treasure trove of a story.
Well, you have to sell yourself, you know, because they've undoubtedly been laughed at before when they tried to tell somebody, and so they just clam up and think, oh, I just won't talk about it if you're going to laugh at me. And when you can show them, you know, that their story, well, look here, look at my map and look at these stickers. People are still seeing stuff out there.
Right.
You know, they say, uh-huh, see, I'm not crazy. Those things have been there for 50 years or better.
Yeah. I love stories like that. Like you said, sometimes it's the older ones that are more interesting, because some of them have been holding it in for sometimes nearly just that long if they saw it when they were a kid. So I love stories like that too.
Right.
Hey, Doug, did you want to give out your, and it's fine if you don't, I was just making sure we didn't hang up without you getting it out there if you wanted to. Did you want to give out your address of where to send the $22 for the books, or just have them email you and then get the address that way?
Yeah, I can give it to you. It's 465 North Moose, as in Bullwinkle the Moose. North Moose Eye Road, Norwich, Norwich, Ohio, 43767.
Cool. So yeah, everybody, that's where you send the $22. That includes the shipping. Not international, of course. And it's just in the U.S., right?
Right. And I have five books out now. The second book is sold out until I get more printed, but if anybody would happen to buy more than one book, whether it's the same multiple copies of the same book or they want to get different books, the $4 postage covers it. You know, I just get a bigger envelope and stick them in there. You know, I don't charge $4 for every book you buy. It's every $4 for each package. Whether it's got one book in it or five.
Well, so that's awesome, Doug. Well, thank you so much for coming back on finally. It's been far too long. I appreciate it.
Well, I didn't realize it had been that long.
I didn't either. I didn't either. I'm like, 35? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I'm on 263.
So what number will this,
Really? I'm in the 260s now. So I'm like, oh my gosh, it's been that long since I've had Doug on? That's terrible.
So is that one for every week or what?
Mm-hmm, one a week, yeah. I do one show a week.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Time flies. And boy, I didn't realize it had been that long since we had talked. I mean, obviously we keep in touch on Facebook, but I'm like, oh my goodness. All right,
okay.
Doug. Well, thank you so much.
Been
you have a good
talking to you.
Yeah, you too. Let me know if you need anything, okay?
Well, I'm so-and-so. I was given this name by my parents. I've been to such and such a college. I've done these things in my profession. I produce a little bark. The Buddha says, forget it. That's not true. That's some story. That's all gone. That's all past. I want to see the real you are now. Well, nobody knows who that is. Because we don't know ourselves except through listening to our echoes. And consulting our memories. But then there's a real evil, and that again leads us back to this question. Who are you? That is the real you. We shall see how they play with this exam. By the koans, to get you to come out of your shell and find out who you really are.
Thank you.
when you settle down in the train, you can read your newspaper and so on. You are not the same person who a little while ago left the platform. If you think you are linking your moments up in the chain. And this is what binds you to the wheel of birth and death. But when you know that every moment in which you are is the only moment, this comes into Zen. A master will say to somebody, now get up and walk across the room. And he comes back and he says, where are your footprints? They've gone. So where are you? Who are you? When we are asked who we are, we usually give a kind of recitation of a history.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.